Sky. Thank you for listening. I am Johannes Wahl. Coming up right now, Ruth Beltran and friends with the Ruthless Truth. Stay tuned.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your... Hello, and welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Ruthless Truth. My name is Jack Wallace, and I will be your host again for today's show. Just want to say thank you for listening to WSLR on 96.5, and please consider becoming a member of WSLR if you like the programming that you hear today. I'm just going to get straight into it today with some true updates on some things that have been going on around in Florida, around in the world, and yeah, let's just get straight into it. I know one of the main things on people's minds right now, especially here in Florida, of course, is the Everglades prison camp, which has been dubbed Alligator Alcatraz by the right wing. If you haven't heard already, right, it's like this big sprawling sort of migrant mega prison built on protected indigenous wetlands in the Everglades. The facility has drawn widespread condemnation as both inhumane concentration camp and an ecological disaster in the making. There's already been several demonstrations since the facility has gone up just a couple weeks ago. President Trump also visited on the opening day of the camp yesterday, which was July 1st. You've already seen videos of the inside of the facility where large tents cover bunk beds that are set up basically just inside of cages. It is also already flooded, who would have thought, with the video surfacing of water seeping into the interior of the tented area. Florida's Attorney General has dubbed this facility Alligator Alcatraz. We call it what it is, a prison camp. Alcatraz really evokes like this image of like a fortress designed for hardened criminals, when in reality, most immigrants detained are really no threats to their communities. This new facility will force the vast majority of its population to stay in tents, exposing them to mosquito-borne illnesses and extreme heat. And we really reject any attempts to paint a false image of our immigrant neighbors, which justify putting their lives at risk. Turning to news from D.C., Trump's big, beautiful bill, I'm sure you've heard of it, has passed the Senate this week and is set to be the largest wealth transfer to the rich in U.S. history, with a major boost coming to the mass deportation machine under Trump. The bill slashes Medicaid, and get this, it will strip 12 million Americans of their health care. This will kill people. It also slashes food assistance and clean energy in order to fund massive tax cuts for the ultra-rich. J.D. Vance actually broke a 50-50 tie in the Senate after three GOP lawmakers voted against the bill. It is not a popular bill. It will now head back to the House to be voted on before heading to the president's desk to be signed into law. This bill is a naked attack on the working class that people all over the country have opposed. Unfortunately, in this system, in this economic system, the will of the vast majority of the people of this country are not really considered when making policy decisions. For some international news, the Trump administration has pumped $510 million of U.S. taxpayer dollars into the IDF, which of course is the Israeli occupying army, with the genocide still ongoing. The IDF has burned through weapons bombing Gaza, Lebanon, Iran, Syria, and Yemen. The U.S. military aid to Israel now totals $30 billion since the start of the genocide in Gaza. The U.S. taxpayers are footing this bill so Israel can restock its arsenal. Now, I'd like to play for you a clip from the recent Socialist Program show, where the host, Brian Becker, interviews Professor Mohamed Marandi, who is an expert on American studies, who teaches at the University of Tehran. They will discuss many questions, including Trump and Israel started a dangerous war against Iran, but Trump called it off after dropping massive bombs. What happened? Was the United States defeated again? And how did Iran pull off a victory? Let's take a listen.
Welcome to the Socialist Program. I'm your host, Brian Becker. Today we're talking once again with Professor Mohammad Mirandi. Professor Mirandi is an expert in American studies. He's a professor at the University of Tehran. Mohammad, welcome back to the Socialist Program.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. Mohammad, we need to talk about what's going on inside Iran. You know, what's missing in the U.S. narrative almost always is an Iranian perspective, and especially someone who's in Iran. There's lots of pundits who are sitting in London or Paris or New York talking about Iran, but they're not there, and you are there. So I want to get your take, your assessment, your analysis of what's happened in these last 2 weeks. But before we do, I saw you on Press TV, one of the English language Iranian TV networks. You were doing an interview, and at that time, and I believe in the same complex where Iranian National TV and radio is located, Israeli bombs basically targeted the studio. You were there. People who knew you were extremely concerned of whether you had actually survived. Other people undoubtedly didn't survive, or other people were certainly injured. What happened?
Well, I was using the Press TV building for the internet because the government had slowed down the internet since the Israeli regime was using it to attack Iranians. And so the only place I could do interviews like this was from the Press TV building itself. And I was preparing for an interview with Piers Morgan when the central building for the Iranian National Radio and Television, which is on the screen, it was bombed. And there were live programs being carried out from there, including a woman, which you may have seen, she was speaking, and then her studio exploded. And there were also two other women. One was a radio presenter. She was also in studio working when the building was attacked with four missiles. And there was a third woman presenting for a children's program. All three survived, but others didn't. Some journalists were murdered. And it's interesting that these three journalists, these three presenters, were all women. And no one in the West, in mainstream media, legacy media, these, you know, feminist organizations that are connected to the powerful in the United States and in the West, none of them said anything. They didn't care about, they don't care about Iranian women, obviously. So I was in a separate building that belonged to the Iranian National Radio and TV, Press TV, and they evacuated the building when the other building in the central complex was attacked. But I refused to leave because I was about to do the interview with Piers Morgan. And so the poor guard kept pushing and insisting. And then he said, I'm sitting here until you leave. And then I was in the backstage of Piers Morgan's show, and his people saw me yelling at him and telling him to leave. And I told them that, look, I'm in a rush. And they, instead of putting me into the program sooner, they delayed it. My part in the debate began much, much later than they had promised. Not that they wanted to hurt me or anything, but they were obviously indifferent to my situation. So while the building was empty when I did the interview, and I left the building afterwards, but again, even though it was still evacuated, I came back in a couple of hours later to do Judge Napolitano's show, because I couldn't do the interview outside the building. So I insisted, they let me in. I did that interview, went out again. Then an hour or two later, I had an RT interview, so I went into the building. So every time I did interviews during those days, I had to go inside an empty Press TV, the empty Press TV building to do so. So that was basically it, but they never struck the Press TV building. But it is outrageous that they would target journalists and an iconic building, building number one for Iranian National Radio and TV, and no one in the West, Western governments, Western journalists, said anything. And the fact that all of the presenters at that time happened to be women, those whose studios were in that building, because they have other buildings too, all of them were women, but it had absolutely no impact, no significance to the West, to the elites.
Well, this is sadly, tragically, but predictably the pattern where all of the concern for human life and damage is for others, not certainly for the Iranian people. Mohammed, let's just go back to what actually happened. The Israelis began bombing on June 12th. The U.S. joined in on June 21st. Donald Trump, you know, went on national TV, said that B-2 bombers had gone and dropped 30,000-pound bombs on three different Iranian civilian nuclear energy sites, and that they had been obliterated by the U.S. bombing. And he was very proud. He was filled with conceit and braggadocio. The American people, Mohammed, are not for this. They weren't for it. We had demonstrations within 12 hours in 30 cities in the United States, within 12 hours after Trump spoke. I mean, we had thousands, perhaps in aggregate, tens of thousands of people overnight. And then Trump ended the war. And I think from my point of view, if he hadn't ended the war, those demonstrations would have become hundreds of thousands and maybe millions, because like the Iraq war, which was based on lies about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, Iraq's so-called capacity to destroy large places or huge numbers of people, that was a lie. The American people, this is etched into the consciousness of the American people. So immediately, anti-war sentiment started blossoming, I would say sort of taking off big time. But let's go over why the Israelis carried out an unprovoked attack against Iran, and why the U.S., which is technically at peace with Iran, joined in dropping 30,000-pound bombs on Iran. Why did they do it?
Well, the International Atomic Energy Agency, first of all, is an organization like all other international organizations created after the Second World War that's controlled by the West. The Board of Governors is a political entity. It's not a technical entity. And if I'm not mistaken, 17 of the 35 board members are European and North American. And two others are South Korea and Japan, which are loyal to the United States. So they have a majority. They voted against Iran and criticizing Iran. And the head of the organization misled people in a statement about Iran. So they tried to make it seem as if Iran was moving towards a nuclear weapon, which was a lie. And there was no evidence for this. And the global South voted against it. The global majority, China voted against it. Russia voted against it. India didn't vote for it. Brazil didn't vote for it. So the small global minority, since they have disproportionate power in these organizations, they were able to use that organization to create an environment to justify war. And the head of the organization, he's in the American camp. According to WikiLeaks, the previous head of the organization, Amano, who was Japanese, when he wanted to become the head, he went and told the Americans, I'm with you on all issues. I'm your man. Just, you know, if you get me in, I do what you say. And that's what happened. The same is true for this guy. So they created an environment to justify Israeli aggression. And then we saw immediately Western media, from liberal to conservative, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, Breitbart, New York Times, all of them suddenly turned and began to demonize Iran, began to spread misinformation to prepare the grounds for murder and slaughter. Very similar to what we saw after October the 7th, when they started lying about beheaded babies and raped women and all those lies. They were all being spread so that the Israelis could justify the genocide in Gaza, the Holocaust in Gaza. So the Western media is basically a tool for the powerful, the legacy media. And they did the same with Iran when they wanted to prepare the ground for war. Although Trump said, I'm against it, behind the scenes, it turned out the night before he was trying to deceive Iran as Iran was negotiating. So he said, I'm against war. And then the next day we saw when the Israelis attacked, he said, you know, he basically said, I was behind all this. I was with the Israeli regime. He was gloating about it. Before the war started, before the Israeli unprovoked war started, we saw the Western media do the same with Iran as they did with Gaza, demonizing Iran, attacking Iran, all the media, left to right, Breitbart, New York Times, everyone. So this is how it began. So it was based on lies, deception, propaganda, and they thought that they would score a big win against Iran. They attacked civilian targets. They murdered senior officials, especially in the military. Many senior commanders were murdered. And what they would do is they would, like, there was an apartment where they destroyed the whole apartment. Roughly 70 people were murdered, including more than 20 children in that building because they wanted to take out one or two people. So they massacred everyone. And the other targets were the same. They would blow up buildings just to get one person. They would kill neighbors. They would kill children, grandchildren. That's how the Israelis are. And then Western media would present this as some sort of brilliant intelligence operation and military operation. Why? Because they kill people in their homes, as if like their homes are some secret. People living in Tehran, they're people's neighbors, they all know who their neighbors are, especially if the person's been on television or he's famous. So the West tried to glorify the Israeli regime. Why? I think there are two reasons. One is to whitewash the regime for the ongoing, as we speak, it's still ongoing, genocide in Gaza. And two, to justify aggression against Iran. But despite Trump's gloating, within a couple of days, the tide began to turn. Iran brought in new commanders, and they began to regroup, and Iran began to hit the Israeli regime, and the tide began to turn. And ultimately, the reason why Trump attacked Iran was because the Israelis were losing the war. And then the reason why Trump then later pushed for a ceasefire was because Netanyahu was begging for a ceasefire. Why? Because even after Trump's intervention, the situation got progressively worse. And as everyone saw, it was the Iranians during the last 2 hours before the ceasefire that were striking the Israeli regime with missiles and drones across the country.
Having Donald Trump and Steve Bannon say what you're saying and what we're saying, it's one thing if it comes from you, it's one thing if it comes from the Answer Coalition, but this is a statement against interest because these are the people who love Israel and support the genocide. They're saying basically what you're saying, that Israel couldn't really withstand the war. Go ahead.
Yes, and there's also the added dimension of the airstrikes that the Americans carried out, and of course before them, on the Iranian nuclear sites. In Western media, we're now hearing that Western intelligence agencies believe that these strikes were largely ineffective and that they didn't do severe damage to the program itself. They only destroyed buildings on the ground, but Iran's key installations are all deep underground. So not only did Iran remove everything that was important from those installations on the ground, but it seems, according to U.S. intelligence, that in Fordo, those heavy bombings did not really do damage to the underground facilities. So this unjustified war of aggression on civilians and civilian targets and on a civilian nuclear program failed. And it's interesting that the buildings that were targeted, they were all buildings that the inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency would regularly visit. And they've never said in any report, these scientists, these experts, that Iran is building a nuclear weapon, that Iran's nuclear program is anything but peaceful. So they bombed the same buildings that are regularly inspected. So these are all war crimes. And while the Israelis and the Americans were bombing installations where we could have had leaked radiation, potentially, that could kill people and ruin the environment and cause a huge catastrophe, the West was supporting the strikes. The International Atomic Energy Agency refused to condemn Israel or the United States for attacking civilian nuclear sites And the Europeans and the North Americans and their allies were saying that Israel has the right to defend itself. So when Israel, the Israeli regime, slaughters Palestinians and carries out a genocide, it's defending itself. When it slaughters people in Lebanon, it's defending itself. When it helps ISIS and Al-Qaeda come to power in Syria, it's defending itself. When it's bombing Iran and murdering women and children and striking civilian targets, it's defending itself. That is the real nature of the elites in the United States and Europe.
The New York Times, speaking to your point, Mohammed, says in its headline, "Strike set back Iran's nuclear program by only a few months," U.S. report says. "Preliminary classified findings indicate that the attack," meaning the American attack with these 30,000-pound bombs, "sealed off the entrances to the two facilities but did not collapse their underground buildings."
I think it shows how sophisticated the Iranians are, and that the Iranians are able to build structures, and their engineers are capable of building centers for science and for the economy to develop new technologies and to bring new technologies into practice. They're able to construct these sites in a way in which the United States, in an unprovoked act of aggression, is incapable of destroying them. And despite the fact that we had this blitzkrieg by the Israeli regime against the Iranian people, the Iranians were capable of regrouping. Even though so many senior commanders were murdered, they were able to swiftly regroup, strike back, and defeat this coalition. The Israeli regime, with the whole of NATO behind it, the whole of the West behind it, Western elites and the regimes, and regional regimes were with the Americans. No one helped Iran. Radar bases in Turkey, in Qatar, in the Emirates, in Bahrain, across the board, in U.S. bases, were being used to help the Israelis carry out their offensive attacks and to help the Israeli regime defend itself. The Jordanian regime allowed their airspace to be used by the Israelis and Americans to down Iranian drones and to prevent Iranian missiles, if they could, from hitting their targets. So you saw this huge coalition of client regimes in the region, NATO regimes, and the collective West working with the Israeli regime. And then you saw direct U.S. strikes on Iran, but it failed. And Iran won the war, despite the pain, despite the suffering, despite the martyrs. But Iran won the war, and the Israeli regime was begging for a ceasefire. And the entire world knows what this war is about. It was not about the nuclear program. It was not about human rights. It was not about any such thing. It was about Iran's support for the Palestinian people. That's why Iran has been punished for 45, 46 years, ever since the revolution. Iran is being attacked because of its support for the Palestinian people, just like Yemen. That is what all the demonization over the last few decades has been about. That's what all the sanctions have been about. That's what all the color revolutions and the sanctions and the terrorist attacks against Iranians over the decades have all been about. It's been about Iran's independence and Iran's support for the Palestinian people against the wishes of the West. The war against Iran and the Iranian people began in the 1950s with a coup. And the British wanted control of Iranian natural resources, oil in particular. And that's why they overthrew the national government. And they installed a dictator who was in power for 2.5 decades. They created the U.S. They created the notorious secret police, the SAVAK. And when the Shah was gunning down people on the streets during the revolution, very large numbers of people with his army, the U.S. president at that time, Jimmy Carter, who was supposedly the most decent of them all, he called the Shah the next morning after particularly probably the worst day of killing, which was called Black Friday in Iran. He called the Shah the next day and gave him his full support. So, and then when after the revolution took place, U.S. animosity, you know, it just went out of control. They supported Saddam Hussein invading the country. They imposed sanctions until they reach maximum sanctions or maximum pressure sanctions, which Obama put in place. And we know the history. So the United States, it was initially about oil and about sovereignty. And then it became about sovereignty, independence, and Iran's support for the Palestinian people, but not just the Palestinian people. The Shah was exporting 90% of South Africa's oil was being exported by Iran. Iran would sell apartheid South Africa that oil. As soon as the revolution happened, Iran cut off ties with apartheid South Africa and ended the oil trade. And of course, the same was true with the Israeli regime. And of course, Iran has been supporting Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and any country that has been under U.S. pressure and sanctions. So it is about this. But first and foremost is Iran's support for the Palestinian people, because apartheid and ethno-supremacism in Palestine is something very dear to the elites in the United States and Europe. And we see that through their support of this ongoing Holocaust. For them, it's not just that the Zionists who believe that Palestinians and Arabs are Amalek. It is the entire Western elites. That's why they're supporting this. That's why they support the murder of Iranian women and children too, because we are Amalek too. We're all Amalek. When one set of people are chosen people, allegedly, everyone else is, of course, not chosen. So that is where we are now. But, and this is the important point, the United States has miscalculated. So have the Europeans. They rely on these so-called Iran experts who say what the governments in the West and the elites want to hear. And then they're well-funded. They invite these politicians, give them huge honorariums to speak against Iran. And this cycle of wealth just continues and a narrative building. So the U.S. believes the propaganda that Iran is weak, Iran is falling apart, the so-called regime is hated by the Iranian people, it's about to implode, just put on more sanctions, put on more pressure, and it's over. The Europeans believe that, the Israeli regime believes that, and so when they attack, they thought that they would have a quick win and that the Islamic Republic of Iran would collapse. But since they don't understand and they believe their own propaganda, they got it completely wrong. And people rallied. And the country is united today in a way in which I have not seen since Saddam Hussein invaded Iran. Since Saddam Hussein, at the behest of the West and the Soviet Union, invaded Iran. And now we see that people were rallying under the threat of airstrikes across the country during the war, last Friday in particular. And on the first night, and they celebrated immediately after the ceasefire, which isn't really a ceasefire. It's a cessation of hostilities. The Iranians have not agreed to a ceasefire. They said that if the Israelis strike, we will hit them back very hard. But the point is that the West miscalculated big time. The Iranian people today, and this is maybe the most important point of all, the Iranian people today, those young people, who didn't see the revolution, who did not experience the war, Saddam Hussein's invasion, many of them young, liberal, who were influenced by the West, the Persian media funded by Western governments had an influence on many of them. They see the West for what it really is now. They see an unprovoked war, the murder of women and children, all being carried out. And they see that the liberal media, the conservative media, all are the same. Whether it's Breitbart or the New York Times or CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, they're all supporting aggression. And that has changed the mentality of that segment of society, which thought differently of the West than people like myself. And that shattered that narrative, that shattered that worldview. So the United States has destroyed its small foothold in Iran among some youth in particular by carrying out this act of aggression and by supporting a genocidal regime in killing innocent Iranians without justification and without provocation.
Wow. I always love hearing Brian Becker interview all these wonderful guests. He's such a great host with such a strong political analysis. And if you're interested in that kind of analysis on, you know, economic, domestic, international affairs, please check out the Socialist Program on all podcast platforms or on YouTube, where the show is hosted on the Breakthrough News channel. Going to move to wrap us up here and talk about a couple different events that are going on in the neighborhood in the next couple weeks or so. Mark your calendars for July 5th at 7 p.m. for Cuba Que Linda Es Cuba, a night of revolutionary music and culture in solidarity with the Cuban people. Check out